Welcome back once again to season 4 of the podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood. As many of you know, I wrote my autobiography as a survivor of human trafficking. It's called Custom Justice. But if you didn't know, you do now. Keeping in line with that, this entire season and last season has been focused on interviewing people who did or plan to write about their own experiences as trauma survivors and how they overcame the past. And as much as we all hate commercials, they are a necessary evil these days. This is what keeps the show on the air. You can also show your support by purchasing one of my many books or donating through PayPal or leaving a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. You can find the links for the books or donation options in the podcast description. As always, a portion of the proceeds go to local organizations that help fight human trafficking. Welcome back to the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Amanda Blackwood, and I have a fantastic, amazing human being with me today. Mark Max Pollock is an incessant spiritual adventurer, entrepreneur, author, visionary, energy practitioner, and Reiki master. I think this is the first time I've ever had anybody with this many titles on my program. But also, the first time I've ever had the opportunity to talk to a Reiki master and really kind of dig into what that looks like and what that means. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Amanda. The pleasure is all mine. It's an honor to be here. I find your story completely inspirational, and I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It warms my heart that you did that kind of research. You wanted to know who it was that was going to be interviewing you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just like having a conversation with anybody, any friend. The more you understand where they come from, the more you're able to communicate with them. So it's, and like I said, your story is just amazing, and I can't wait to tell you a little bit about mine, but most importantly, I can't wait to share and hear how, we've gone through the path of overcoming some of these obstacles.
Man, it's no easy journey being able to overcome traumas, but it's always worth the work.
You know what it is, it is work. I mean, that's the key. That's the name of the game. And it's not easy to face your fears, face your anger, face the bad decisions you've made in life, face what the cards you were dealt, and then decide that you're going to do whatever it takes to take that next step forward in your evolution. So and that process is a really painful one in my experience. And it's just, but you have to take it one step at a time. You know, it's like the old adage, you got to eat that elephant one bite at a time. You've got to heal one painful step at a time. At least that's the way it worked for me. I had a troubled childhood. I had abandonment. My father left when I was 6. My mother was involved with a old high school boyfriend, and that turned into her eventually marrying him. He ended up just being an abusive nightmare. So after a long time, after several years, we ended up just basically escaping one day. And I think you can probably relate to this story, but it just got so bad that we packed up what we could in my mom's old blue Oldsmobile, and we just left and went into hiding. And we spent quite a long time just wandering around kind of nomadically, staying with friends, assistance from friends and churches, and sometimes sleeping in that old Oldsmobile, and until she finally met another gentleman and ended up remarrying, and he ended up being a really nice fella. So
wow.
I got lucky there. But by this time I'm 12, 13 years old, and a lot of damage had been done. And I basically got out of my youth and into early adulthood feeling really damaged. I was depressed, anxious, had a host of psychological issues, physical issues, just very broken individual. And it kind of culminated in my mid-20s to the point where I was suicidal, self-destructive behaviors. And I just got to where I'm like, well, I've got to change things radically, or I'm not going to continue. It was too much pain involved. So that started my turnaround journey, which was a long, painful process, took decades. But in the meantime, I learned a lot of valuable lessons. I basically nuked my belief system. I was during all the abusive period and early childhood. My mother was in a kind of a fundamentalist Christian environment, very rigid. And that played a big part in my, I should say, feeling that I was trapped. You know, really, I came to the point where I've had to admit to myself that I really don't believe anything that I've been taught. Nothing in my world reflected how I want it to be. And I just went through the process of nuking my entire belief system, starting from ground zero, and with the determination that either I can develop something that resonates with me, with my soul, that provides healing, that I can bring into my reality to make things better, or I'm just probably not going to be around much longer. And that was seminal for me. And as soon as I made that decision, reality responded in a very amazing way. Just serendipity, people coming into my life with bits of information, reading far-flung books of spiritualism and Eastern mysticism, and diving into also hardcore science, especially around the quantum realm, and trying to just piece together something that made sense to me. How does this reality work? How does the world work? Why am I here? All these big questions that we have, I just had to find the answers to. For whatever reason, I was driven to. I think it was just out of sheer desperation. And I began that process.
Wow. That is quite the journey from a very troubled childhood. I love that you decided to start questioning things. You were already questioning your own mental health and your own abilities in life. And it sounds like you had been for a long time.
Yes.
But then you dove in deeper and really dug into the stuff that probably scared you, I would imagine. You know?
Yeah. I mean, anytime, listen, the lowest point in my life, and you may be interested to hear your story regarding this, but the lowest part of my life was when I had to come to terms that nothing, absolutely nothing that I was taught, the ideologies, you know, how life works, why am I here? Absolutely nothing. I believed none of it. And I had to start with no belief system. And that is a scary place. I mean, yeah. You're in a deep, dark hole with no answers about anything. And I didn't know if I would find the answers. I didn't know if I would ever get out of that deep, dark hole. And I think a lot of people find themselves in that very situation. You know, you get overwhelmed with nihilism and with dissatisfaction with how you were brought up, and the you know, what you were taught is real and truth. And when you come to the point where you have to admit to yourself that, you know, you no longer ascribe to any of these ideologies, it's just a really scary place. You're hanging out over a precipice, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I was brought up by a couple of baby boomers who believed that you never had to go to church to be a Christian, and mm-hmm. that if something was broken, you fixed it. And while I can agree with the, if it's broken, you fix it, you don't just throw it away, what they were preaching basically was that if you are in an abusive relationship, you made the decision to be in that relationship. So it's your choice and your decision. You have to stay there. I got married to a man that was more than twice my age when I was 19, and I left him shortly afterward because he was abusive. And my parents, my family, tried to force me to go back to him by saying things like, you made your bed, you got to lie in it.
Yeah, it's that absolutist culture that a lot of Christians grow up with, right? I mean, you know, they point to the Bible and to their interpretation of certain passages, and they say, well, this is the absolute truth, and no matter what, you're going to adhere to it, and that's the only way you're going to earn your way into heaven. Otherwise, you're going to be damned. And it's so strange.
My parents didn't know the Bible well enough to be able to quote any scriptures. They just said, this is the way it is. You know, as it was a very bizarre mentality. They believed that, and before we started recording, you had said something about you think you grow up with a crappy childhood, and then you find out about somebody else, and you think what I lived through was nothing. That was one of the things that I started to question, oddly enough. When you experience trauma, it creates new neural pathways in your brain. And basically, you have to go through the grieving process to grieve for the person who would have been, because this trauma has changed who you are and who you will forever be. Mm. What my parents used to tell me when I was a kid growing up is, oh, you think this is bad? You ought to see what we had. You ought to see what we went through. And they would never talk about their traumas, but there was clearly something that had happened to both of them when they were kids growing up. And everything in the world was compared to what they had experienced.
So, right. And you know, people do that all the time, right? And right. I mean, look at our political discourse. It's like, yeah, that's bad, but you know, this person did that, you know. So it's like we live in a comparative society and culture.
Right.
And pathologies don't just arrive out of nowhere. They're passed down from generation to generation. And you know, I kind of went through the same process that I imagine you went through, and just like, I got to break this cycle somehow, some way. And you go about trying to figure out how to do that. And, you know, when you have a family like that, there's going to be very little support, and there's certainly very little in the way of examples to lead you. Right. So I was, you know, I was searching for people and examples and, you know, how, you know, and I'd look outside of my culture, which was, it was poor, working class, poor. There was just a lot of people in a cycle of poverty, in a cycle of abuse, and in a cycle of just not being happy with their station in life. And it didn't matter how hard they seemed to work, nothing ever seemed to change. And that was so disheartening. And when I looked around, looked kind of outside, raised my eyes a little bit, I could see that there's another reality out there. There's another possibility for me. And there's a possibility that, you know, I can get out of this loop of poverty. There's a possibility that I can become whole psychologically and emotionally and physically. And I just kind of use that little flame to drive my exploration. And it just became an amazing journey.
And I love the way you put that. When you step outside and you look up, I remember what it was for me. Instead of stepping outside and looking up, I would turn on the TV and watch old black and white movies from the 1940s. And I saw that there was a different way of living, a different way of life, where people respected one another. And there was this mutual love, and just everything about it was so magical to me that to this day, I have an obsession with the 1940s. And I have more clothes and shoes and handbags from the 1940s than I do modern stuff.
You know what? I've seen some pictures of you, and you exude that vibe very well. You're like a beautiful 1940s starlet. Yes.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun having that love. But for a long time, that love was such a distraction for me from being able to deal with traumas and stuff. I'm going to focus on this over here. And it was a good distraction because I wasn't focused on poor me. I was focused on what can I do next?
Right.
What's the next adventure? What was it? Did you have like these mentors that you looked up to be able to make this change in your life?
You know what? I didn't. Unfortunately, I just didn't. There was just nobody in my sphere of influence that resonated with me. Male father figure. So I really kind of went the intellectual approach to begin with. Okay. Wow. If you don't have a cultural compass, then I just started exploring literature. I explored science. I started trying to figure out, okay, where does reality come from? How does energy flow into this material realm? What is it? You know, what does science say it is? And I kind of went through the science rabbit hole for a long time. And simultaneously to that, I just started reading, okay, you know, I'm going to read all this stuff that my church from youth said was satanic, you know, basically. And so Eastern mysticism, I mean, really nothing was out of bounds. I don't care if it was Church of Wicca or whatever it was. I'm trying to read it. I'm trying to figure out where they're coming from, what they're tapping into. And then I would just go about the slow process of taking bits of information and applying it in my life. And when I basically eradicated my belief system, the only thing I left intact was the aim to create my own version of reality, to create my own identity around my belief system. And so I would take everything in without regard to trying not to judge it, try it in my life. If it worked, if it had produced results, if it got me one step further down the road as my personal development, then I would keep it. Otherwise, I would let it go. And that process really served me well because it just slowly built a view of reality that worked for me. And as a caveat, I should say that my opinions, what I discovered, the insights that I have as far as, you know, how reality works, how it engages with humanity, humanity's role in this whole process, my personal role in this whole process, they're just my ideas. They came from a lot of work and a lot of searching. They resonate with me. They work for me. I mean, they may or may not work for anybody else. And I think that's fine because what I tell people is you have to search for your own personal spiritual identity. Otherwise, you're basically operating on somebody else's vision. And that was vitally important to my overall adventure in, you know, developing this ideology.
That is very cool. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to kind of explain for the audience, for the people who don't know, what Reiki is. But for a second, I want to see if we can maybe circle back to your mom real quick. Sure. She had her share of troubles. She had a husband who first left her. Then she was married to a man who was abusive. You guys were homeless for a while. I mean, this is a lot of trauma for a mom to carry around. How do you think she was able to break that cycle and to end up finally finding a life partner and husband who was not abusive and was supportive?
Yeah, it was an adventure. You know, we talked a little bit about legacy cycles of drama, abuse, pathologies that are passed down from generation to generation. My father, he's still living. He's a great guy. We're great buddies. But you know, he was, orphaned at a young age. His mother died in childbirth when he was young, his, basically raised by an aunt and uncle, in the agricultural valley of Texas, migrant farm work type laborers. And he had a lot of trauma, right? Yeah. You can't escape that unfazed. It's going to affect how you interact with life. It's going to dull your emotions. It's going to dull your ability to communicate. And my mom, again, you know, she comes from a cycle of dysfunction, extreme dysfunction. You know, mother left her when she was a child. She was basically left to raise her siblings. Her father was kind of a very interesting, dynamic, charismatic character, but massive alcoholic and crazy man, you know? Wow. So, you know, it's, you know, you get two people that are damaged like that. It's just going to be an uphill battle. So I don't blame either one of them. I understand where they came from, and I've gone through the whole process of understanding and digging and you know, going from anger and resentment to really love and acceptance and empathy and just, you know, I love them both to death. They were dealing with their own demons, just like we all have to. Yeah. You know, the really traumatic part of my childhood, I don't blame her for that. She was just doing the best she can do. And I think I'm a firm believer that at the end of the day, we're all just doing the best we can. Some of us, that best we can is not very good. But if you could do better, you would. So I try to, part of my healing process was just to try to dig down to the core base of the pain and the sadness and the anger, and then find the human that was at the end of that chain. And then through meditation work, really dig into, okay, who is that person? Why are they here? What lessons are they teaching me or embedded in all this drama? And then once I discover that, I'm able to view them as basically a teacher of sorts, somebody that I'm gleaning insight and working through issues that I need to work through issues with in this lifetime. And then I can alchemize all that anger slowly into empathy and then into forgiveness and love unconditionally. And then that's the process that I go through to kind of release anger back into the energy field in a higher frequency.
Very cool. So what is Reiki? How would you define what Reiki is?
Yeah, a cornerstone to my ideology is that, you know, everything, and science backs this up, of course, is everything begins as energy. This universe 13.8 billion years ago emerged from a state of pure energy, and it's been on an evolutionary path ever since. And I believe that evolutionary path is to link energy with matter so that energy can realize a full expression of this beautiful material realm that we occupy. Imagine that you're just pure energy, bliss, love, you know, all these things that when you kind of connect with pure energy, you're filled kind of overflowing with this sense of love and bliss and possibility. And when you transfer that into the material realm, all of a sudden you lose that connection. So I believe we all emanate from energy through our spirits. And we're here to kind of continue the evolutionary process of that energy that we are part of, realizing and being able to connect without obstacle to this material realm so that our spirit can enjoy this beautiful material realm, the sun on our face, the touch of a loved one. I mean, all this sensorial experience that we have, we are slowly but surely evolving our ability to access that. Humanity, as soon as we developed our sentient brains and minds, we can now, for the first time, energy can reflect on itself. So that was just a huge advance in this process. Of course, we have a long way to go. You know, the main obstacle is we're dealing with our monkey brains, our biological gray matter brains, which are programmed from past experiences, I believe they're programmed from past lifetimes. I believe, you know, they're programmed through the physical processes of DNA. And we have to train our brains to submit to our spiritual mind, which basically lives in the realm of energy. So Reiki is basically the manipulation of energy fields. So as human beings, we have the ability to funnel and focus energy to create reality. And in fact, we are creating reality every moment of every day. Creative energy just flows through us. And some of that energy is high frequency energy, which is beneficial to us. And some of that energy is low frequency energy, which is not beneficial to us in our evolution. So Reiki is a way to kind of manage that that energy flow through the body, through the chakra systems, through our energetic fields, and we can manipulate that for healing. So the energy is a lot of time, most of the time when you're experiencing, I would say even all the time when you're experiencing some kind of a physical manifestation of sickness or something's going on with you, there is a block of the energy field. So through Reiki, the practice of Reiki, we can try to work with another person to help them unblock that energy. So it flows through the body. So it flows through the energetic body, which surrounds our physical body, so that it's not blocked and you're not experiencing these emotional obstacles or these physical obstacles. And that's basically it. I mean, we're manipulating energy real time.
Very cool. I know there's a lot of questions that people have had about Reiki over the years. What's probably the most common question that you've had?
Well, listen, it sounds very woo-woo, right? Particularly if you're coming from a place where I came from, like a religious tradition, which really kind of, okay, we've got Sikh doctrine. I mean, this is how God works through us. And, you know, basically we've got God as an intercessor between us and everything else. And, you know, I just find if somebody's curious and open, and maybe and with Reiki and energy healing and energy fields, you can work this into any religious ideology. And I think that at the kernel of most all religions, there is the truth that God works through us, that this energy flows through us, through God. I like to call it core energy, just because of my background. God is a loaded word, but you know, core energy, God force, this energy, all religions teach that this energy is available. So as soon as people realize that, they start opening up more and more to the possibility that, okay, I don't have to abandon my religious identity to experience the energy flow. So the question that I get most is, how does this fold in, interact with my existing belief system? And the truth about Reiki is you don't have to believe that it works. It just is. So it's not based on a belief system. It's a physical system. So as energy gets manipulated, they start experiencing the benefits of that, then it becomes self-evident. And that allows your brain to overcome the skepticism and start accepting the reality that everybody is connected. Energy connects everything. Energy is integral to our life, our body process, our health, our mental health, how we deal with everybody else. Relationships. And as soon as that starts becoming apparent to your mind, it starts then kind of stepping aside and letting your spiritual mind inform what kind of energy you want to flow into your life. And it just opens that door.
It seems like there's a lot of this kind of information and kind of the idea of your philosophy in your book. Your book is called Curious Avatar, exploring reality, spiritual energy, personal transformation, and the meaning of life. That's such a powerful title. I love the cover of the book too. Oh my gosh, isn't that beautiful?
Thank you so much, Amanda.
It's the eclipse, right?
Yeah, it's basically an orb that's kind of reflecting off of water in a kind of an ecliptical state. It was designed to reflect the notion that we are this physical form that we're in. We're basically avatars for our spiritual self. And we are here to learn the lessons that we need to learn in order to evolve our connection back to spirit in this material realm. So the material realm is different than the energetic realm. And so we are in the process of evolving our minds and our bodies to accept this unobstructed flow of energy from spirit. So we are basically avatars. And in the spirit realm, we're basically God, source energy, the energetic force that creates everything in this material realm. So we are just slowly but surely learning the lessons in each lifetime to take that evolutionary step, one little step further. So the avatar motif is literal. I mean, we are literal avatars for our spiritual minds.
I love that you just answered the next question I was going to ask. It was perfect.
I love it when it comes together.
So our time is just about coming to an end, but I always have a couple of last questions that I ask people. One is one that I just recently implemented, and it's, would you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert? And how does this compare to who you were when you were a kid?
You know what? I am naturally introverted. I love alone time. I love my being with myself. And I think, I don't know if that's a nature or nurture. From childhood, the trauma, and I'm sure you can relate to this, is the first thing we do is we build up walls. We try to numb ourselves from the stimuli from the outside. And those walls just, they're hard to overcome. And I think that just gave me a natural proclivity to be an introvert. I will say I'm not a true introvert from the sense that I love people. I love being around people. I love having conversations like this. I love exploring with people. I think I'm very social. A lot of my friends would say, no, you're not an introvert at all. But at the end of the day, my core is alone time is fine with me. So I think that may be the overarching definition of an introvert.
Yeah. I have to mirror all of that stuff. I get along just fine when I get along with small groups of people. But at the same time, at the end of the day, if I spend too much time with others, I'm exhausted. It just takes it out of me.
You know what? It does me too. I mean, I get exhausted by, I love it. It's great. But an extrovert will get energy from that interaction.
Right.
Yeah. They will actually, it elevates them. My wife is an extrovert. She gets energy from that. So we're very, very opposite in that way.
It's funny how we're drawn to people who are typically the opposites. I used to be an extrovert, and I was always more drawn to the introverted people. So part of the reason that I frame the question the way I do is because I was such an extrovert for so long, but having such an extensive period of trauma that lasted from the age of 4 until I was 31 years old, I guess, all of that kind of altered who I was as a human, and I became more and more introverted as time passed.
And yeah, yeah. Do you think it was a protection mechanism?
I do, in a way. I think some of it is also fear of strangers, because it was a lot of strangers who were participating in the abuse.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so I think it's a protection mechanism and fear and, you know, all of that stuff in there. So there's obviously some things that we still have to work on in our lives. And this is a never-ending process to overcome trauma.
You know what? That is a huge point, Amanda. It is a never-ending process. And I think I kind of went through I don't remember as a child being extroverted. As a matter of fact, by the time I got to my lower 20s, I was just walled off emotionally. And that's, you know, just very dead. And as I've healed, my extroverted self has been allowed to emerge. And that's, I love that.
Yeah. You start actually having real connections with real humans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, it's spectacular. Yes. And to me, and really that's what this is all about, this life, and having, you know, those connections with other beings, other, you know, avatars, other spiritual selves that, in my belief, you know, we're all kind of paddling in the same direction. So, you know, we're all trying to just evolve our state, slowly but surely. And we're trying to help each other do that. Sometimes that help comes in the form of, major obstacles, conflict, problems. Sometimes that help comes from just having a positive influence in somebody's life. But at the end of the day, we're all on the same track of trying to evolve.
So I have all of your social media information, your Facebook, your Instagram, your Twitter, your LinkedIn. I've got your Substack and your website. I've got all of this stuff that's all going to go in the description of the podcast so that people can find you. They can buy your book. They can talk to you about going through your specific training and your healing process. But I'm going to end this episode with my very favorite question. That's the one that none of my guests get away without being able to answer.
I will give it a shot.
What is one thing that you truly love about yourself that's not related to your physical appearance?
You know what? And this is easy. It's my insatiable curiosity. I am a curious avatar through and through. I ask questions. I question everything. I want to explore everything. I want to learn everything. I want to evolve as much as I possibly can in this lifetime. And that is the favorite thing I love about myself, is being absolutely open and curious.
Mark, you are a beautiful human being, and I love this about you too.
Amanda, you are a beautiful human being. It's a pleasure and honor to speak with you. I hope we get a chance to do this again. And I just wish you blessings and prosperity and all the best.
Hey guys, have a safe and happy Halloween out there. If you've enjoyed tonight's episode, please make sure you check out the episode description. There you'll find links on how you can learn more about this guest, links to connect with them on social media, and how to support the podcast. Remember, I don't get paid to do this. My boss is a bit tight-fisted. I can say that. I work for myself. In short, this show really is all about the guest. If you've enjoyed their interview, please feel free to let them know. You can also tune in to my other podcast, Growth from Darkness, which is co-hosted by a lovely lady from Australia. We talk about what trauma responses are and healthy ways to move beyond the past. For more information, just go to growthfromdarkness.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/growthfromdarkness.